I'm Carmen. I'm an addict. Hello. I'm very happy to be here today. And I was glad that I got this topic because, when I first came to the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous 20 years ago this month, actually, and this basic text is the only literature that we had other than a few pamphlets. And, I read this book so much, especially in the beginning, and I just remember being so thrilled that somebody had bothered to write a book that was about me, and it was probably at least a part of that beginning of not feeling so alone, you know, that, I mean, it couldn't be just me if that, you know, they wrote a book, so, you know, there had to be a lot of other people like this too, and, it helped me understand a little bit of why I did the things I did and why I felt the way that I felt. And I just loved the book. At first I couldn't just lay down and go to sleep at night. You know, I was used to, passing out. So for a long time I would sit up and I'd read the book at night until I could go to sleep. And, you know, I pulled it back out and, I looked at it, looked through it a little bit when I, earlier this week, when I was thinking about what I was going to talk about, and about half of the book I have underlined, but I picked out a few of the readings that really helped me a lot, and thought I'd talk about those things. And one of the readings is that says honesty is the antidote to our diseased thinking, and I would take little short lines like that and hold on to them and through the next day to help me stay clean. And when I first came to the program, I thought I was pretty honest. I grew up with honesty ingrained in me, and I hung around a lot of people that broke and enter, but I pride myself because I didn't do that, and thought I was pretty honest. And I got here and discovered that I had an awful lot of self-deception, and I had rationalized a lot of things in order for me to keep using. And, you know, I was never that bad because I hung around with people so much worse than me, and, you know, I did a lot of minimizing. And so it was a long process for me to get honest about my using and my addiction. And, later on in recovery and relapse, I read that a lot too, because when my first year here, I had several relapses, and it says we must get honest or we will use again. And I remember that, I try to keep that in my mind today because, I have to watch those little things. Like, last year, I went through the Home Depot line with this half-dead plant. You know, I didn't hardly think much about it till I was doing some step work with my sponsor later, and it came out, and I realized, that I did, that was dishonest, and because it was half dead, it was those, it's all these little things that I could say, that's nothing. And, but I have to stay honest about all those little outward things too, or it turns into, self-dishonesty. And before long, I'll be, tell myself I can have one little drink. So it's really important to recovery for me to stay honest, rigorous honesty. And another reading was the eventual misery of using is not worth the temporary escape. And I held on to that for a long time. I had learned not to romanticize that first high or even the first few. And I had learned to look at where I'd be a month from now, or later down the line. And another one I liked was when we use, we lose, and we lose everything. And I learned a lot in my early recovery about priorities, and learned that staying clean had to come first. I was in a relationship early in recovery, and I knew that if I got loaded, I would lose that relationship, and that was a big incentive for me at the time. But it wasn't about material things because I didn't have much material, but I was gaining self-respect and I was getting some self-esteem back and starting to feel really good inside from having spiritual principles. And I knew I would lose all that if I used. And of course, today, after being clean a while, I would have so much to lose. You know. Let's see, then. I was who is an addict and why are we here? I read a lot. I was told to read those over and over again to help me get honest about my addiction and see it for what it was. So I wanted to read a few lines out of that. Can y'all hear me back there? Speak up. Okay. I've been told I don't talk loud enough. It says, our world shrank and isolation became our life. It says, we forgot the times that we sat alone consumed by fear and self-pity. And we avoided the reality of our addiction. Is this one the one that works? Oh, yeah, no wonder. Have y'all heard anything so far? it says, we were trapped in the illusion of what if, and if only, and just one more time. And, you know, but you know what stood out to me a lot in these chapters was how it talked a lot about fear and the isolation. And you know, I had some outward things going on. I had a DUI and my house had been raided one time, and I had some, you know, little things going on like that. But what really caused me to ask for help was the emptiness and isolation from using. And I always had, you know, plenty of people to party with. But, you know, one night after everybody was gone, I just really felt that that emptiness, and I asked for help. And a week later, I found myself in a methadone line, and there was a little flyer about NA hanging up there. And so, you know, as soon as I wanted help, it was there. Let's see, what else? The steps, you know, I did all my step work through the steps in the basic text. And the first step, you know, I thought that was the hardest step for me, because when I first came to the rooms, I wanted to get off of that one particular drug, and I still thought I could drink a little bit, and I thought I had a little bit of control. And there's a line in there that says, we can't control our using for any length of time. And that for any length of time, that was important for me to hear. Because I had to look at the big picture. You know, I might could stop for a day or control it for a week or two. But in any length of time, it was all the same. The end was all the same. And it says that it's our reaction to the drug that makes us addicts, not how much or what we used. And I still want to mention step 11, because I really love that step. In my early recovery, I always loved going to 11th step meetings, because, you know, it just feels so good when I came out of them. Let's see what page that is. And, you know, I was raised in a strict Baptist church, and I grew up to narrow is the path, you know, and there's only one way. And I learned some spiritual principles there, but I also learned a lot of narrow-mindedness. And what I love about the second and 11 steps is the open-mindedness of the spirituality in this program. And, you know, I think I was clean about 3 years in recovery before I could really say to myself, okay, I don't believe all of that anymore, and not feel like I was committing blasphemy or something, you know. And, you know, some things I kept, but a lot of it I dropped. And today I think God, to me, is more internal, you know, and he's in me and he's in all of you. And it's, you know, all of the answers to my problems lie in the spiritual principles. And I've learned a lot about how powerful those spiritual principles are. You know, it's like the power of forgiveness, you know, allows me to drop resentments and go on with my life. And just the power of unconditional love, you know, can overcome hate and anger, and just all of them have a lot of power. This past year or two, I've learned a lot about understanding and how much that can help me deal with situations. And then, let's see, I want to read something in We Do Recover. It says, in our recovery, we find it essential to accept reality. We can have a chance to function as useful human beings if we accept ourselves and the world exactly as it is. We learn that conflicts are a part of reality, and we learn new ways to deal with the world. We learn not to become emotionally involved with problems. We deal with what is at hand and try not to force solutions. And that's helped me in a lot of situations. You know, 'cause if I get all into my emotions, it can really become a lot bigger deal than it is. And it keeps me from thinking clearly and making good decisions. So, you know, sometimes I just, when I catch myself doing that, then I try to step back and objectively take a look at what's really happening, you know, from all sides. And this past, about 5 weeks ago, my husband decided he didn't want to be married anymore, and we've been married about 19 years. So I'm going through some pretty big changes now, and you know, the tools in this program make it all so much easier. And you know, and I applied the principle of understanding with that, you know, to try to understand instead of be so angry, because it doesn't feel good to be angry. And you know, I know I have to go through some of that. People keep telling me you're going to be angry, but you know, and I went through a couple of days last weekend when I was getting really angry, and I actually got my husband to tell me again, now, why is this happening? You know, kind of you know, regroup and make sure I'm still, you know, seeing it for what it is and staying in reality. And in my early recovery, I learned to pray for the acceptance of whatever the outcome is, and I learned that I get so much serenity from that. And in this situation, I know what the outcome is. It happened very quickly. You know, it's a surprise to me, but the whole process was very quickly, and it's already over and done with. And but I'm, you know, I'm praying for acceptance for what my life is today. And I know from the past, you know, from when I first came in the program, that the possibilities are endless. You know, I can't see how good that it can be, and I still believe that that's true today. And always I get emotional when I talk about the good stuff. I can tell you how bad it is. let's see. Something else I wanted to read. You know, something else that makes it a lot easier for me today is that, and especially just in the past few years, I've gotten such a stronger sense of self. And that's helped me so much with not taking it personally. You know, I see that I'm powerless over the situation, and I know that it's not about me. You know, it isn't a reflection of me or anything I did. You know, so and it's amazing, I guess, kind of, that it didn't hurt my self-esteem, you know, that he left me, because it just isn't about me. And I know that that you guys love me, and that makes such a difference too. I don't feel alone, and I'm not afraid of being alone anymore. And all of that is a result of being in recovery, because I was very codependent when I first came in the rooms, and recovery has helped that change so much. And, so anyway, I wanted to conclude with some promises, and this is "And More Will Be Revealed." It says, says, our disease has been arrested, and now anything is possible. Narcotics Anonymous offers only one promise, and that is freedom from active addiction. We are now free to enjoy the simple things in life, like fellowship and living in the harmony with nature. Spirituality enables us to live to the fullest, feeling grateful for who we are and what we have done in life. Since the beginning of recovery, we have found that joy doesn't come from material things, but from within ourselves. We find that when we lose self-obsession, we are able to understand what it means to be happy, joyous, and free. An indescribable joy comes from sharing from the heart. Not only is this way of life better than the hell we lived, it is better than any life that we had ever known. And you know, that's what recovery is about to me today. It's getting out of myself and helping somebody else. And it's about having peace of mind. And when the day's over, I feel good about myself because I know that I did the right thing today. And I appreciate all of you being here. And that's all. Thanks.
Thank you, Carmen, for sharing. And now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Brian.
Hi, family. My name's Brian. I'm a slowly recovering addict. I'm also a proud home group member of the Crossroads group, and that's in Olney, Maryland. That's on Thursday nights. That's in the Montgomery area, 8 o'clock. Feel free to come on down anytime, and we welcome you. Thank you, Carmen, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, and talking about the basic text. I'm really nervous because, you know, I got a phone call and somebody asked me if I'd be willing to come out and share at the convention. And I spoke a couple years ago here, and I spoke about the topic of home group. And that was a real comfortable topic for me to talk about because I've always been an active member of a home group throughout my entire recovery. Excuse me. And then, you know, they asked me if I'd be willing to come out and talk, and I told them, sure, that'd be no problem. And they said, okay, well, we'll mark you down for Saturday at noon, and the topic is basic text. And I was like, huh? Basic text? And they said, yeah. And I said, well, what do I talk about? And he said, I don't know. Talk about how it helped you in your recovery. And I said, sounds good to me. And the reason why I say, what do I talk about? Because what I could say is pick it up, read it, work it, and you'll probably stay clean. You know, I mean, there's some more aspects to it than that, but, you know, I had to really, you know, I really thought about it a little bit, but I tried not to think about it too much because I don't like to get too much in my head. I'm very grateful to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I got clean in January of 1985, and for me, I haven't found it necessary to pick up since. I'm very grateful because I was able to get in here, you know, when I was about a month shy of turning 23 years old, and I'm 42 now, and I'm living to see days that I never thought I'd see. And I truly say that deep down. I'm not just saying that. I was on a, you know, much of my active addiction early on, and I reflect the longer I've been clean, I reflect back and look at it, and I realized that, yeah, I had some fun times. I really did. But it's not the fun times that bring us to Narcotics Anonymous. It's the rough times. It's the pain. It's the suffering. And the last several years of my recovery, when many of my friends were still actively using and having a good time, I was no longer having a good time. I was really struggling at that point. And a lot of that is right. It's right in our literature when it talks about who is an addict. And it, you know, basically, I knew I was an addict before I ever even found the program of Narcotics Anonymous, but I was unwilling to accept where I was at that point in time. I was still in real heavy denial, but I was also using a lot of rationalizations for the situations that I was getting myself into. The numerous DWIs I got were always an issue of being in the wrong place at the wrong time, never had anything to do with, you know, actually the fact that I was an addict. And the fact that I could never get off of probation from the time that I was 14 years old until I found this program of Narcotics Anonymous, and And when I found this program, I was still on probation, but I completed my probation, and I haven't had to go back on probation. I haven't been locked up. I haven't been in a fist fight with anybody. I haven't tried to hurt anybody. This program is a gift. And I was introduced to this program. I was lucky enough to have the gift back in 1985 of finding this program through a rehabilitation program. And I'm very grateful to that, but it's the program of Narcotics Anonymous that's kept me clean. The program that I was in just gave me some information and gave me an introduction. And back in 85 when I came in, there wasn't as many meetings as there are nowadays. And I'm very grateful to watch the fellowship grow as it has. One of the other gifts that I was given was the gift of the basic text. And when I say that, it truly was a gift. I went to a meeting one night, and a guy that I used to run with when I was out there using, because the rehab that I was in at the time did not provide NA literature. But when I went to this meeting, an old friend of mine, he presented me with the basic text, and he said, "Here, read this book, and it'll help you stay clean." And he kept it that simple. And that was the second edition of the basic text. And there were a lot of rapid changes. It went from second edition to fifth edition in a couple years. I mean, there was just all these changes. What edition? That's the second edition. Can I see that for a second? I didn't come prepared like Carmen. She has but one of the things that she said, and I actually talked about this last week at a meeting I was at, I said, in my basic text, I have so many things underlined, I have them highlighted. You know, with highlighters, I stopped highlighting because the things that aren't highlighted are the things that now stand out to me. Yeah, because the whole book is totally covered. And that's what happens. Every time I read something in this basic text, something is different. And I gotta be honest with you, I don't read the basic text much anymore. I listen to it. I'm not much of a reader, and I have the basic text on CD, and when I'm stuck in a traffic jam and I'm feeling a little frustrated, I put a disc in. Actually, I converted it to MP3, so I'm getting high tech here. But I listen to it in my car. I have it on my computer if I'm sitting at work and I want to listen to something, I do. But there is something in the second edition that I want to read. And, this is the one that I read out of because this is the one that I was given. I have the third edition, I have a fourth edition, I have a fifth edition. I've given many of these as gifts. But just to me, to show how the fellowship has grown and how we now perceive ourselves in Narcotics Anonymous. Let me find this. The only way to keep from getting or continuing a habit is not to take that first fix pill or drink. If you are like us, you know that one is too many and 1,000 never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again or create a new one. The substitution of alcohol has caused a great many addicts to form a new addiction pattern, which in its progression brings as many problems as before. We seem to forget that alcohol is one of the oldest known drugs. It would appear that we are people with addictive personalities who are strongly susceptible to alcoholic addiction. And that's out of the second edition of Narcotics Anonymous. And they, for many of you that heard how it works, read here today before the meeting started, we've changed quite a bit and we've grown quite a bit, but I still choose to read out of that edition because that's the one that was given to me as a gift. And the book that I do hold in my hands right now is like an atlas. It's an atlas that leads to the many roads, and if you follow them, it's their paths to recovery. Even just the basic symbol at the beginning, that describes what our program is all about. When I first read that, I just thought that was the neatest thing. How all the sides coming together form one pyramid to freedom. And then the larger we get in terms of the fellowship, the larger the pyramid gets. And it's just a really cool idea. And it's addicts that put this together. When I went into reading a lot of the literature, and I look at who's an addict, and I read that, I mean, it describes me as a whole, but until I'm ready to take a look at that part of my recovery, there was no way that I was ready, even going to be ready for Narcotics Anonymous. I had to understand that there was no way that I could use drugs safely, and that until I was willing to surrender and give up using, that, you know, it was going to find it very difficult for me to even begin moving on, you know, in this journey of recovery. You know, what is the Narcotics Anonymous program? I know what the Narcotics Anonymous program is, and I didn't know it from reading literature. I knew it from when I went to meetings originally, and I heard people reading it, but I barely ever heard anything that anybody was reading when I first got clean, because I was still very much out there, you know. But what I knew Narcotics Anonymous to be was the very first meeting that I ever went into. And that was when I walked into a meeting in Bethesda, Maryland. Whenever they cheer over there, it sounds like a choo-choo train. So, anyways, the very first meeting I went into of Narcotics Anonymous, there was about 40 or 50 people. And it was one of the biggest meetings in the Montgomery area at the time. There wasn't many meetings in the area that were that large. And I remember when I got my chip, my one-day chip, and it was a chip. It wasn't a key tag for anybody in here who's saying, hey, you know, we don't talk like that in this fellowship. But it was a poker chip, and it had, like, little gold lettering on it that chipped off if you held it too long in your pocket. But I remember when they say, does anybody here have 29 days or less or a desire for a new way of life? And I stood up, and I walked down the little pathway in between the rows of chairs, very similar to this room here. And as I was walking down, people were clapping, and it felt like almost an eternity walking down this aisleway. But I was absorbing everything that I could. And I got my chip, and walking back, they were still clapping. And I just remember looking around in that meeting that night and realizing all the people that I saw that night. You know, they'd been where I'd been, they'd done what I had done, they'd felt what I had felt, but they just didn't look like I looked at that moment. They looked happy, and they were hugging each other, and I was pretty miserable. You know, it was my very first meeting. So, but I saw something in there that I wanted, and you know, that's where I learned about what Narcotics Anonymous was. What is the NA program? I learned it from there. It's a whole lot of stuff. But for me at the very beginning, it was just, you know, it was fellowship. It was meetings. It was just people being there for other suffering addicts. And that's how I utilized it, and I still do to the same day. I mean, to me, it's all about what our literature says, you know, right in the basic text and even those readings at the very beginning. I read that little passage out of How It Works, and I could sit up here and probably talk forever and go through the entire 12 steps, but I'm not going to do that. They have step meetings here at this convention, and all I'm going to say is that, you know, the steps are there for a reason. They're a tool, and they've provided me a new way of life. The principles that I've developed as a result of practicing the steps have given me a new way of life. I've been able to develop, an understanding with a spiritual companion, and I know that my spiritual companion's always with me. A lot of things have happened to me in the last several years. I mean, I've been clean 19 years now. So one of the things that is in this book is more will be revealed, and the longer you stay clean, the more will be revealed. I've had to walk through so many different paths in my recovery. And I've done so, and the thing that this book has taught me is that no matter what, I never have to pick up. No matter what the situation is, I can walk through anything. And I've done that, but I've done that by practicing principles. I've done that by working steps. I've done that by picking up the phone and talking to people. I've done that by going into meetings and sharing, and I've done that through talking with my sponsor. And those are just some of the tools that we learn here. The traditions too. Actually, let me just talk a little bit about what can I do, which is the chapter in the book That's actually the chapter I think I enjoy more than any chapter in the book. First of all, it gave me a foundation of what I needed to do in order to be, to stay clean, to help another addict that's suffering, and it gave me a whole lot of guidelines of what would work for me here, and it laid it all out for me. It says in there, and this is about the only passage that I know out of the entire book that I can quote. And I'm probably going to be off a word or two somewhere along the line. I can quote some of the readings because you hear them a zillion times over, when you go to meetings. But it does say in What Can I Do that the real miracle happens when the need to use drugs has in some way been lifted from us. We have stopped using and we have started to live. And that is probably one of my favorite passages in the book or quotes or whatever in the book, because when I read that, that is when I realized I no longer had the obsession to use drugs, and that I had the right and ability to start living life and living life happy without drugs. And that's one of the reasons why I still continue to come to Narcotics Anonymous. I go to meetings. I believe that according to them downstairs, I got 7,042 days clean. I think somewhere along the line, I've learned how to not use, even during crisis situations. But I haven't always learned how to be happy. And if I detach myself from this program, and it says it right here in the basic text, that I need to be, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. If I don't keep myself surrounded with other people that are in recovery, I might be miserable. And I might pick up, and I might end up in jail, and I'd probably die. So I choose to continue to come to meetings so I can live life happy without drugs. And it's worked so far. I haven't found any need to change that. But What Can I Do also taught me about service work, becoming involved, and that's why when they called me to come down here and lead a meeting, I was like, sure. I didn't have any plans to come down to the convention this year, and I'm grateful that I did. It's a pleasure to do service work. I've done my share of service work throughout. There's a lot of people out there that are service junkies. They stay involved in service the entire time that they're in recovery. Sometimes I like to step aside and allow some of the newer people to come in and gain some of the benefits that I've had. Because God knows it's helped me to stay clean. Now, when we get into the traditions, I go to a home group that I love, and it's my home group for a reason. And the reason I go there is because there's a nice mixture of brand new people and people with long-term recovery. And we have a lot of group consciences, and we have a lot of discussions about the traditions and things like that. I go to a meeting that sometimes struggles with following the traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. I believe, in my opinion. But one of the reasons I continue to go to this meeting is because, I believe the meeting needs people that have been in Narcotics Anonymous for a little bit of time with a little bit of experience in Narcotics Anonymous, so they can help carry the NA message. Not to go around poking my chest out or anything like that, because there's people in there that got as much clean time as me or more clean time than me. And then, my sponsor goes there, so he'll tell me to chill out anyways. And I have a lot of friends in there. I have people that are in my network. I have sponsees, and I have sponsorship brothers, and just the whole line of people. So, I believe that the traditions are written for a reason. For me, when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, this fellowship was trying to grow in 1985, and we've come a long way, and I believe that we've come where we are today because of the 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. It's been a good journey, in regards to watching the fellowship grow as well. Moving on, recovery and relapse. I haven't had a relapse since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous, so I can't talk about the pain and suffering that I've experienced as a result of having a relapse, but I can talk a little bit about people that I know that have had relapses and have come back, and the struggles that they've gone through, and the fact that they always tell me it's just as bad out there or worse than it was when they first found Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I've also shown that I can be very compassionate to the addict who still suffers, because, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody anything that they did was wrong if they go out and use. I mean, that's just the nature of addiction. Those things happen. I've been blessed that it hasn't happened to me as of yet, and I pray that it doesn't. But I'm always going to be there for those people that have struggled with this program, and the reason why is they might be the ones that saved my butt one day. You know, whether I feel like using or not, they just might be there for me one day when I just need somebody to talk to. And, I mean, relapse does happen. And for some people, it's a very jarring experience. It's the one experience that they need sometimes for them in order to get this thing. You know, but you know what? There's a lot of people with a lot of clean time out there who really don't practice the principles and work the steps. Abstinence does not equal recovery. You know, recovery is about doing footwork and about practicing principles and about sharing with addicts, you know, the addict who still suffers, and about working with a sponsor and about doing step work. It's a little bit of everything. It's not just about not picking up today. But not picking up today is the primary thing. You know, we don't have a chance to do the other things if we do pick up. For me, just for today, for me, it's just for today the NA way. And that's pretty much how I do it. I learned early on in recovery that I can't really worry about the future because it's not here and yesterday's gone. So my focus has to stay on today. And I'm glad that I learned that, because I've gone through so much stuff in the last couple of years. I don't know if I would have been able to do it by not at least trying to stay in today. You know, the other literature that's now available to us is the Just for Today book, and that's got a place where I leave it every day, where I know where it's going to be, and I have a chance to read it every day. And I read it today, and it was about prioritizing meetings, you know, getting to meetings and learning how to, you know, work my schedule around my meetings and not my meetings always around my schedule. And sometimes that is damn hard to do, because this book has also taught me to incorporate balance in my life, and that some other things are important in my life. I have a family and I have a child and I, you know, have hobbies, and it says all these things right in that book, that when we get clean, we find new things that bring us joy. And some of them are hobbies and our careers. When I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I had no career path at all, and I have a career today. And these are just some of the things that I've learned, but I've learned them from staying clean just for today. There is actually one of the readings that's in Just for Today, not in the basic text, but in the book, that talks about, if I dash off to a meeting the same way I dashed off to use, and I'm dashing off to a convention, and I'm dashing off to this service workshop, and I'm trying to tell everybody, look at me, look how great I'm doing, but I'm not handling any of the other responsibilities in my life, am I really in recovery at that point? This is for somebody I'm talking about that has been around for a little while. I'm not talking about the newcomer. The newcomer, go to meetings every day. Please, because we need you. And you bring me hope and inspiration as well, and that's one of the ways that I stay clean. And that's another reason why I go to my home group, is there's a lot of new people and people with time. So I get to hear a little bit of both. I get to hear that pain and suffering, what it's still like out there, but I also get to hear some of that experience with staying clean and getting through the tough times without having to pick up. We do recover. We do. And, everything in that chapter is me. Everything that's outlined in there is me. When it described the processes of recovery and the things that transfold, you know, and transpire as a result of staying clean, you know, just for today, you know, as it moves on, those are the things that I hung to. And whenever I hear that, whenever I listen to that, the NA Basic text on CD, and I hear we do recovery, I listen to it and I think, this is me, this is my journey, and this is the path that I've been following. And everything in that book has been to a T so far in my life. Okay? And then when we get into the final chapter and more will be revealed, that's really where I'm at. You know, more will be revealed. You know, when I was early on in recovery, when I had about 5.5 months clean, I caught my hand in a printing press, and I was flown to hand trauma center in Baltimore. And I was not committed to Narcotics Anonymous at that point. I went to more than 90. I went to a meeting every day. I hadn't missed a meeting at that point. I just hadn't committed yet. You know, I was still very young. I was, you know, 23, not sure this is exactly what I wanted. And, you know, when I got there, you know, at this hospital, I was going through a whole lot of stuff about I've had a relapse, because they were pumping me full of Dilaudid and all other kinds of narcotics. And I was just brand new. You know, I mean, I didn't know enough to know any different. And what this basic text taught me in More Will Be Revealed, and it's only in a few little paragraphs, but it talks about physical pain in recovery. It talks about sometimes there is a need to use medication in recovery. However, this does not constitute a license to use. And it talks about that. And I am so grateful for those short paragraphs that are in More Will Be Revealed, because it helped carry me for a day or two. But what helped commit me to this fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous and this program was when 4 or 5 people, I can't even tell you exactly how many it was, came into my hospital room from a different area, not even from the Montgomery area, and they said, we heard a guy from Montgomery County was in the hospital and he might need a meeting. And they brought a meeting into me. People, I knew one out of the 4 or 5 people. And they carried a meeting into me, and they told me that everything was going to be okay just for today. And they let me know that when I get out, if I do the same things that I was doing prior to going into the hospital, that I would stay clean. And one of the things that I did when I got out was, you know, I look back and, you know, today, and I reflect back on that time period when I had, you know, at that point I had about 6.5 months clean, because I was in the hospital for 7 weeks. But when I got out and I had multiple surgeries and I was in excruciating pain, I mean, I was in terrible pain. And I chose to leave there and go to a detox facility with the physician that had worked with me when I first got clean. So he knew about my recovery. He dealt with my pain. And, you know, and he really didn't do a very good job of dealing with my pain. You know, he basically was taking me off the narcotics in a way that wasn't going to send me into withdrawal and make me want to go out and use. But I was in a lot of pain. And I look back today and I said, man, that was crazy. I should have definitely been on pain medication during that time. But I can't question my higher power now, because guess what? I stayed clean. And I went through that pain. As bad as it was, I went through it. Because there's no telling, had I left the hospital with any type of medication, that I left to my own devices what might have happened, and that I wouldn't be up here talking to you all today. You know, because I don't know if I have it in me. You know, I still have a big enough ego that I don't know if I could come back in here if I went back out. And, you know, and I choose not to use today. But the journey of recovery and More Will Be Revealed taught me that I could have a career today in my, you know, going down this path. And it's also taught me that I can go through anything that comes before me, whether I've had multiple surgeries. You know, I've had surgeries recently on my knees and things like that, and I've gotten through those times. But I do that by using the tools that's taught to me in this basic text, and that's the tools of letting people know what's going on with me. That's the tools of, you know, filling in my sponsor as to what's happening. And, you know, and then in addition to that, you know, I became married in this fellowship, and I've gone through many, many times, hard times in here, and just shared recently with my sponsor. And Carmen, I can really feel for you, you know. I just shared with my sponsor Thursday night for about an hour and a half about some of the the problems that I'm having in my own marriage, and I say, damn, I got 19 years of recovery. I shouldn't be having these problems. But, you know, it is what it is. It doesn't say anything in this basic text that we're not going to go through normal life experiences just because we've been clean. You know, that's just the way life is. And, you know, I've put both of my parents down since, you know, to rest since I've been clean. And that, and it's happened in the last, you know, 99, my dad died, and then my mom died in 2002. And but they both had the opportunity to see me grow and were very proud of me. And my dad even told me, son, I am proud of you. You know, and those were some of the words I needed to hear, you know, and he knew that I was going to be okay. And my mom knew that I was going to be okay. And, you know, amends have been made as a result. But that's part of the journey of recovery. And for every, you know, and what I say a lot in meetings is that I need you people more than when I first got here, because I have a whole lot more to lose today than when I first got here. Because when I got here, I didn't have anything. And now I have a whole lot, and it's all inside. And I don't want to lose that, you know. So for everybody out there, thank you for having me come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian and Carmen, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. We still have a few minutes before we close the meeting. If anybody would like to come up and share, come up to the podium.
I'm an addict named Phil. I don't know. These guys shared a great message about the basic text, what it was like when they got here, and I'm not going to dispute anything. I just wanted to give some people some information about the basic text, because in 1998, a book called Miracles Happen came out, and I read that book, and I got hungry for the history of Narcotics Anonymous, and for the last 6 years, I've been running on the history. And it's like, if anybody wants to know about it, all you got to do is type in na.org on your computer and just ask anybody on the website anything, and they'll be more than glad to give you information on a history of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, the first basic text came out in 1983, like these people were saying, and it was red. And it was a gift edition that was made, and it cost $25 back then. That's a lot, even by today's standards, you know what I mean? And what it did was it funded the ability to make 10,000 copies of the basic text. And then the second edition came out later that year. And if you look in the front of the fifth edition basic text, in the front couple pages, it'll tell you every year the basic text was changed. In 5 years, it changed four times, you know, from 83 to 88. We haven't changed the basic text since 1988, you know. And the second edition came out, and they realized that there were some things missing in the second edition that were there in the first edition, and then they decided to make a third edition. See, we got some addicts in Narcotics Anonymous. And so they said, let's make a third edition, and then when they did that, there were still some things that weren't exactly kosher, you know, some things that had to do particularly with the fourth and ninth traditions. You know, people were up in arms, you know. By that time, there were some Narcotics Anonymous purists. You know, you might have heard them as N.A. Nazis, you know what I mean? And Greg Pierce, back in 1970, he got clean. He was one of the first N.A. purists. You know, he believed in this Narcotics Anonymous way of life. He believed in one addict in one fellowship being sponsored by another addict in the same fellowship. I don't need to go nowhere else and have a different sponsor. I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm not in whatever anonymous you're. I'm not going to put you down for where you're at. I just believe that one fellowship is very sufficient. Jimmy Kay had that idea back in 1953. That's why we're still here. And, you know, and so by the time the third edition revised came out, man, I tell you what, there was a lot of people. And what I love about Narcotics Anonymous is that, like, we just want to keep changing, you know. And so they decided to say, okay, well, let's copy it one more time. I'm not really sure how it changed from the third to the third revised. I just got possession of a third edition, a third edition revised, and but by the time they made the fourth edition, the printer screwed up bad, really bad. There are 6 whole pages missing throughout the basic text in the 4th edition. And some people who read the basic text, you know what I mean? They told me that 3 million are sold, under 300 read. Some people were reading theirs and decided that, like, we need to get this stuff back in. And so then the 5th edition came to be. And since 1988, it hasn't changed. You know, and there's some information going around in the Carr Report now where we don't want the first 10 chapters of the basic text changed. It served the test of time. You know what I mean? You want to add literature? We have. They talked about it. You know, we have a lot. What do they call it now? You go to meetings, the NA library, right? We got a lot of stuff. But there's no substitute for the basic text. You know, there's no substitute for the basic text. You know, language has changed because, you know what? Some new kids coming in, they hear fixed. They don't know what that is. They hear toke. They don't know what that is. You know what I mean? Using. You know, I don't care what you did. But, you know, I really... And what I wanted to say too is a lot of people, you know, the little white book, they always go to meetings and so much misinformation in meetings. Be careful. You know, they hold it up and say the original version of the basic text. It's not. It's always been the white book. It's the revised edition because the first edition had no stories and some stories were put in it. You know, I'm lucky to like be, junkie for the stuff of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, the archive, so to speak. I just got possession of a 1976 white booklet and a 1983, you know, and a lot of people. What I really get crazy about, and I'm not saying anybody in particular, but you know what? There's an evolution that happens in my recovery as I stay clean. And you know what? I need to change with the program. They told me change, I must or die, I will when I get here. But then these same people that stay here don't want to read the new literature. The only approved version of the basic text currently is the 5th edition. The only approved version of the basic text currently is the 5th edition. I might want to read the other stuff because I just got the original draft version of the basic text from 1981 that was sent out to groups. I just copped it, you know what I mean? And I'm reading that thing and I'm thinking, this is great, but I need to be current. I can't be afforded to lapsed in my program. And how dare me tell the new guy to get into the new literature when I'm reading all the old stuff. You know what I mean? I gotta stay current in my program. You know, it's really great the evolution that's happened in Narcotics Anonymous. And why is it that, like, with years clean, that, some people wanna stop changing or pick and choose when they wanna change? I can't be afforded that luxury. If you wanna know about the history of NA, you wanna know about the basic text, NA.org. Give yourself a treat.
Is there anybody else that would like to share?
Yeah, my name's Tom. I'm an addict. I don't know. I had a couple of thoughts over there. You know, I was sitting there. I was thinking, like, imagine being in a world where there was no basic text, what it must have been like for those guys in the beginning. And I remember, you know, when we first started, you know, when I first came to NA, there was no basic text. I showed up in 83, and I had a roommate, and he gave me a copy of that blue book. It was, you say, It Works on it. And I was thinking, like, he ended up relapsing, and I ended up staying clean, and he sold me his book. I remember that. But it was hard. We used to, like, read we had little white books and stuff like that, but we didn't really have, like, a book. And I remember when he first gave me that book, I didn't even know it existed, because I figured NA just had the little white book, and that was it, because I was new. And I remember opening it up, man, and it was so powerful. For the first time, I had something that, like, literally the pages came alive, and the words jumped off, and they started to make sense to me, because I was hearing it from people, from information being passed down through the generations. And for the first time, the words were alive for me on a page, and I could go back there. And I remember just reading it almost from cover to cover, and the stories, and how they spoke to me, every single one of them, and every single word. And the type was terrible, too, and you could hardly read it. It was real small. But I also remembered in our latest basic text, my favorite line in there is in the beginning of that. And I was sitting over there thinking I was getting goosebumps from it because it talks about reaping that harvest. You know, that we'll reap a harvest in due season. You know, so, you know, that book is like seed. And it's just spreading it out there, and it's being planted and planted. And we get to see the harvest of that. You know, that we're not like laboring in vain. You know, we're not wasting our time. That something powerful is coming out of that, and it's greater than all of us. And we get to sit here. If you stay here long enough, you'll get to see it. You know, because sometimes we're so short-sighted. And then eventually you see the, you go from seeing, like, a meeting list with, like, six meetings on it, and next thing you know, there's, like, 20 on there. And next thing you know, there's so many people in those meetings that they have to split off into five more. And then you see areas where there once was one area in Pittsburgh, then they broke off into two areas and three areas and four areas. And we have so much today, you know, it's unbelievable, you know, the harvest that we're seeing. Almost to the point now, it's like it's overwhelming. And what I see is that there's so many newcomers that we almost need to, like, really take a good look at that. That, like, you know, I was heard a woman speak, and she had, like, 34 years. And she used to go to meetings with, what was that, Jimmy Kay? I can't remember his original name. But she used to say that we're losing too many people. And when she said that, my heart just broke because I knew it was true. You know, that we need to do more for the newcomer to provide what was originally a pride for us. In the beginning, we were so small that we could get more and more one-on-one attention. But, you know, I don't know what that has to do with the basic text. But anyway, the harvest is real. And I've been here long enough to see it, and I see it in people all the time, you know. Because sometimes I get tired, and sometimes you get weary from doing good. And I look around, and all of a sudden one day someone will come up to me, and you'll just see them, like, just grow. They're just like, whoa, I didn't even see it. And then it was you see the miracle of this program work, and it's just amazing. So thanks for listening.
Thank you to those who shared, and can we close the meeting with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer?